So, Becky, have you seen my goat?
I don't know. Did something really, really get it?
Ah, you're supposed to play dumb. Oh. Come on.
Sorry.
This is funny, guys.
It's out of my nature to play dumb.
Yeah, this is funny man, straight man stuff. This is straight out vaudeville. How are you not getting this?
I don't know. That should be in my blood, shouldn't it?
Well, I wasn't going to get all racist in here. Jeez. Hello, this is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. This is my show. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. You'll notice this is a Saturday. And you'll also notice that it's just me and Becky, and you'll all also know that we're on vacation. I did say that thing. We are actually recording on Saturday because I am missing a goat because somebody got it, as Becky so wondrously stole my thunder from me about.
That's my job.
No, it's not your job. What do I pay you for? Oh, wait. So why don't I give that up and move on? Georgia Senator David Perdue, speaking at a Faith and Freedom Coalition conference, suggested that attendees should pray for President Obama, referencing an interesting biblical passage. The Republican senator referenced Psalm 109:8, which reads, "Let his days be few, and let another take his office." However, the next verse reads, "Let his children be fatherless, and his wife a widow." According to a Perdue spokesman, he in no way wishes harm toward our president.
So what was he thinking in the may his days be few part? Like, it doesn't say may his days in office be few. Four more years.
We're at the end of the Obama administration. He's only got a few hundred, you know, like 200, maybe 100 and some days left.
This verse is not referencing a lame duck.
His days are few. In as much as his administration is ending and we have a constitutional limit. So it's really easy to pray for stuff when it's basically prescribed by law.
Whose law?
Or prescribed,
Sam?
I guess that would. Come on.
Now,
yeah, I'm getting into a prescribed proscribed debate with myself. Just watch.
You can get into all the debates with yourself. I don't know. So as long as it's not with the Mr. Perdue, Senator Perdue.
Right. Not the chicka guy. This is a senator from Georgia.
Okay.
That was a mistake I made. I don't even know that the Perdue guy's still alive.
So what is it? The Faith and...
Well, Faith and Freedom Coalition. It's a coalition that started up once it stopped being about cultural hegemony and started becoming about being a freedom fighter.
Okay.
You know.
Can we flip the narrative and call them insurgents and subversives or something? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like people who call a president they don't like a regime and a president they like is an administration. It's something I try to avoid.
All right. Fair. Fair call
I let people call themselves what they like because Faith and Freedom Coalition sounds pretty terrifying on its own. I don't think that name needs any help.
So Psalm 109 verse 8, is this like a first half of a verse or is this the entire verse 8, may his days be few and someone else take his office?
According to the New Kids on the Block, no, sorry, the New King James Version, that's it. Let his days be few and another take his office. Now, this is Psalms. They do get kind of short. I mean, this is a book, you know, right? Is this in your book?
It's in my book, yes. Yeah. It's in the book of my people.
Yeah. Like I know. Come on.
I wonder what other presidential-type psalms you could come up with or verse fragments come up with that, you know, sound like they're just innocuous but really say things like, oh, and dash yourself against rocks and, you know, poke your eye out with a hot spear and stuff like that.
I imagine people say Jesus wept a lot around a president.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it sounds like you're being meaningful, even though you're not, really.
Obama is like unto a mustard seed. How? Exactly?
Yeah. So clearly he's trying to do like a Bible joke in the middle of his Bible conference, and that's fine. But clearly didn't take the wider context in account. But I guess this leads to my new show, my new game show. I'm doing a game show. So, Becky?
Yes, Sam?
Stupid, murderous, or murderously stupid?
I'm going to go with murderously stupid on this one.
All right. You're going to have to back that one up because I disagree.
I'm thinking that possibly, you know, with the internet, you can use Bible concordances really much more easily now.
Yeah.
And so you say, all right, Obama has this many days left in office. I'm going to search the Bible for the word office and see if it appears, you know, for any elected official or judge or whatnot, and say, oh, look, may his days be few in office. And he sort of looks at it really, you know, cursorily and says, that's a great one. Ha ha ha. Isn't that funny? We can have like our own jokey thing. You know, screw that correspondence dinner. We're way better because we're using biblical humor. And he just kind of ignores the fact that it says, you know, also, may your kids be orphans and your wife be a widow.
All right, so you got murderous covered.
No, sorry, you
got stupid covered.
The murderously stupid? Well, do we mean murderously as in the, you know, enacting murder? Because I'm thinking of like, wow, that's murderously funny.
Does Senator David Perdue actually mean harm against the president of this great nation, this wonderful republic of the United States?
I think harm to his reputation. So maybe just stupid.
You know what I mean by murderous. Come on.
No, I was thinking murderously stupid as in like royally stupid.
Stupidly murderous then.
No, I'm not going to go with stupidly murderous. Stupidly murderous is someone that obviously gets caught and is like, what?
Not really doing the Gracie Allen thing today, are you?
No, not at all.
Actually, this isn't the thing that gets my goat. Like, I literally think he's just dumb. I think he either, like you said, he either Googled it on Bible Gateway and said, whatever. And said, oh, yeah, that looks good because it says he's going out of the office and just completely didn't see the second verse. Or he knows about it and just didn't think that anybody would see any wider implications on it. Do I think he actually wishes physical harm to the president of the United States? No. No, he's not that much of a knob.
No.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, happy birthday to Sasha Obama and Feliz Graduacion to Malia. The Obama girls.
Oh, right on.
Yes.
I figured that out.
They shall not be orphans.
No, it just took me a minute to... I don't...
Happy graduation.
I don't speak Spanish. I'm also deeply stupid. So,
but not murderously stupid.
But not murderously stupid.
So your goat is safe.
At least on this one. A 44-year-old woman is in police custody after a bomb explosion in an Evanston, Illinois Target bathroom on Thursday. The bomb, constructed from a plastic bottle, damaged one stall but caused no injuries. Police are investigated if the crime is connected to a backlash against Target's new gender identity aware bathroom policy. However, there is no indication of any connection at this time.
Sam, you said this was a fun one?
Well, it's weird.
It is weird.
I mean, it looked like somebody shoved something, like, you know, this looks like lighter fluid in a Coke bottle type stuff.
So it looks like any given public bathroom?
Here's the reason I want to talk about this story, and I want to put it in your head, and you don't know that I'm, you know, just go with this one for a minute. In a bathroom, in a Target, in Evanston, Illinois, whatever, there's somebody puts a bomb, right? So you have one population of people, me among them, I openly admit, think, this is somebody who doesn't like the Target's new bathroom policies, which is like boycotts and change.org petitions and all that stuff about because, you know, people need, you know, because of the war on taking a dump. And then I saw another population on my where you have a lot of people going, terrorists. So, Becky, what did you think?
I was figuring that it was the bathrooms are so unsafe because of transgender people that we must show that they are universally unsafe and keep everyone from going in them altogether. I was thinking it was an improvised explosive device in the war on taking a dump,
so,
rather than the war on terror.
No matter what side of the argument you're on, you think it's some religious weirdo blowing up a Target bathroom in Evanston, Illinois.
Yes, I think this qualifies as murderously stupid.
I might be murderously stupid, but that's not my point. Is that like literally everybody I talked to about this one thought that it was some extreme religious group blowing up a bathroom. It was either one or the other. Nobody actually said, which is what it turned out to be, I was wrong, is that it may just be a criminal person not entirely there. Just somebody who wanted to cause some mischief. However, religion is a force for good.
Is it now?
A lot of people have been telling me that.
Well, in this case, I don't know. I mean, we're automatically associating a destructive act with some religious group.
Everybody's automatically associating this with some sort of religious act. Everybody I've talked to, one or the other, a lot of people think it's because of the bathroom policy. A lot of people are going, oh my God, terrorism.
But here's the thing, 16-year-olds set off mischief bombs in public bathrooms and school bathrooms all around.
Right.
And they've been doing that for ages, right?
Right. So there's two sides to this. One is, okay, you know, don't go off based solely on your prejudices. Actually wait for evidence. But you should always do that. But the other side of this, if these are our preconceptions, all of us in the United States, our preconceptions are when we see this, we think religion. How good is religion? It's not a strong argument. It was just, it's a little thought experiment that it is
a provocative thought experiment.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we run the risk of saying, well, you know, behind every stereotype, there's some kind of reason. But I don't think that it's quite that.
I have no problem running the risk of that because, well, shall we look at the last 2 years in religious terror? I mean,
I'd rather not at this point,
right,
actually.
We got a reason to feel that way.
Indeed. And there is a war currently on taking a dump, right?
Yeah, and there is a war on taking a dump. And there's also that whole ISIS deal.
Hey, you know who the new peaceniks are on the war on taking a dump?
Who's that?
George Takei. You know, he had a while where he said it's okay to say Takei, where he was protesting the don't say gay, you know, bills in, I think, Tennessee schools.
Oh, right.
Now
right.
He has an awesome t-shirt you can buy that says, it's okay, or you can pee next to me.
Okay. Do they got one saying, I don't want you to pee next to me? No, I'm not a bigot. I'm just pee shy. I'll wear that one.
No, I don't know about that one.
Because I hate going to the bathroom next to other people. Actually, I hate going to the bathroom. The cats are in the room.
Especially when they jump out of the shower.
Well, that's just terrifying.
And we got lurky cats all over the place.
Yeah, they're creepy. Cats are creepy. Yeah, screw my religion argument. Let's just talk about how creepy cats are.
Maybe a cat planted the bomb in the Target.
Now you're really reaching.
I really am.
I was really reaching with my thought experiment. I fully admit it. But now cats planting bombs in bathrooms because of bathroom policies.
They're protesting that they can't be present and watch you creepily take your dump.
No, but for the record, if this turns out that it was somebody causing mischief for, you know, purposes inside of their head or whatever, and not because of the bathroom policy, I, for one, am relieved. And I'm glad.
Your
pun not intended.
Relieved.
Desist.
I have ceased.
But this doesn't get my goat. I just thought it was an interesting thing to discuss.
So ISIS and bathroom bombs don't get your goat. And
no, they may get my bathroom, though.
I
grant. However, a Christian author's recent book suggests that Christopher Hitchens verged on a deathbed conversion. Larry Tonton's book, The Faith of Christopher Hitchens, is based on two long-distance car rides the author and Hitchens took before Hitchens' death in 2011. During the car ride, the pair read from the Gospel of St. John. The author goes on to say that Hitchens backed off because of his reputation as an atheist.
Sam, we've never talked about things we don't believe on long car rides.
Yeah, okay, so... Here's the thing. I will openly admit right now, I'm a big fan of Christopher Hitchens. Somebody I would emulate if I could. I believe in the power of being an orator. I believe in, you know, I believe that the kind of stuff that he does can actually make a positive change. And that's the kind of thing that I can do. So he's somebody, hero, bit of a reference, definite influence on the way I do things. Not nearly as widely read at him. So, you know, there's that. But really? You're going to do this? I mean, let's talk about Christopher Hitchens for a minute, okay? We're talking about a man who was kind of a darling of the left. He wrote for Variety. He was the editor at The Nation. Did stuff like that. War came, and he says, no, I'm for the Iraq War, and here are my reasons why. Didn't agree with him. Made a lot of friends at Fox News and inside of conservative media. Kind of changed his mind on some things, started offering a different position, lost those friends, lost a lot of friends on the left, lost a lot of friends and lost a lot of admirers inside of the atheism community, even at the time. He was an atheist, but he also said some fairly strong pro-life things. He did. He made some very serious claims about philosophical and moral problems he had with abortion. Go look it up. He did. Had a very strong stance on waterboarding until he himself was waterboarded and said, if that's not torture, nothing is torture. said several times during his cancer treatment, once, I'm pretty sure, while I was in the room, that after he died, there were going to be people who suggested that he converted on his deathbed, that this was, a quote, a nasty piece of business that people do, unquote. And even said that at the time, there were people trying that out on him, and to not believe it.
What kind of baffles me about this is, why is Mr. Taunton saying this at this time? What does he get out of it? What does he gain from it?
Well, he is a Christian apologist. His other books, all the other books, or rather, the other book of his that I could find was also a book about Christianity. He's involved with some Christian apologetics organization, and he did public speaking stuff with Christopher Hitchens quite frequently. What does he get out of it? I'm assuming money.
Are we seeing maybe at a time when in general politics, strangely enough, sort of there's a decrease on the national scale of the amount of chatter and vociferousness about religion and politics, and maybe bringing it up is you know, maybe trying to reclaim a little bit of that market share.
Yeah. Well, I mean, deathbed conversions of prominent perceived opponents of religion, not necessarily actual opponents of religion, is a going historical theme among religious people. You have the purported deathbed conversion of Darwin.
Was poets, Darwin not authors. Himself religious?
Right, he was. And that's kind of the weird thing about it. But it was more like a deathbed recanting, I suppose. But every time you've got this person who says things, you've got in their death moments when nobody can see them, they suddenly have a complete about face, a complete change of heart because they're near death. And then once they die and the dead person can no longer challenge you because you know they are dead and cannot speak, then the stories come out. Oh, yeah, he was actually a Christian the whole time. Or, yeah, he thought about becoming a Christian. His unshakable atheism was completely shook.
I can see why this would get your goat. When we have people that say, you know, that you must respect the dead, and you have utter, you know, reverence for a dead body and how it's treated and where it's buried and what prayers are said,
right,
and how the funeral service goes, that's, you know, that's one thing. But I think to desecrate the memory of someone, their innate personality and their personhood and what they stood for by, as you said, Sam, I mean, you made that argument. Once someone can no longer refute your, you know, your claim about them,
yeah,
you're defaming their memory. I mean,
yeah,
screw the desecration of the body. I don't care what happens to my body after, you know, I'm dead.
Right.
That's no longer me. But what's me is who I was when I was alive.
Yeah, and I mean, this is distinct from I've seen people talk about this, and they connect it to Mormons converting people after they die.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't that.
I don't even care so much about that.
I can see why some people would, but I'm dead. Like, honestly, when I'm dead, I'm gone. I don't care. I'm incapable of caring because I no longer exist. Go ahead and baptize me after I'm dead. I'm dead. I really don't care. You're not going to be able to undo what I've been saying in the radio for 6 years. And it's not going to, and it won't change my mind, because you can't change my mind because I'm dead. But I could see the psychology why somebody with, you know, who's a Mormon and is devout and has family who isn't might want to do that after they die. You know, I would like to hang out with you after I'm dead. It's wanting to keep loved ones close, or family close, or something like that, especially in a religion that puts so much pressure on family. This is, ha ha, I win, and you can't tell me I didn't. This is just puerile bullshit. This is just schoolyard brinksmanship. This is crap. And I am not giving this Tauntaun guy a dime. I've read what excerpts I can online, on The Atlantic, and a couple other places, and it looks like a really serious case of projection. It really does. Like, this guy looks like he's looking for some serious validation. and getting Christopher Hitchens to take his side after Christopher Hitchens is gone is how he's going about it.
If there ever were someone to be able to validate you, would be sort of your philosophical opposite. Now, it was said that they were friends and they had taken long car rides together.
Yeah, yeah.
So
they took apparently a 13-hour car ride reading the Bible at each other. Which,
whatever,
I mean,
if I could take a car ride with Christopher Hitchens and read the Bible.
I don't know. That seems fairly heaven and hell to me. Yeah, I get to have a really long conversation with Christopher Hitchens. Plus,
you have to read the Bible.
Downside, I got to read the Bible. Yeah, I don't really. I can see why that might be interesting to him being a Christian. It's his most important book. I don't know what the heck I would read with Christopher Hitchens. I'm not going to make him read Dune.
Well, I just love that it's,
assuming he hasn't read it already.
I mean, that's like me saying, you know, okay, Sam, you made me read Dune, right? As a condition of, us knowing each other at the time, right?
I wouldn't put it that way. But,
okay. Yeah. You were very interested in my reading Dune, one of your favorite novels.
Well, you kind of boasted at me that you didn't read novels, and I found this something...
Yeah.
I found it a significant incompatibility.
I would agree. Okay. And I took the challenge, and I read Dune twice, actually, and then I got stuck in all of the history of how things happened and the language of how words got put together, and that was really cool.
What I was aiming for, so mission accomplished.
So, yeah.
Put me in a flight suit.
So I took your challenge, and we have differing interpretations of Dune. We, you know, gain different things from it, but if you're still alive and I die, you're not going to go around 3 years after the fact saying, oh, Becky was such a fan of Dune on her deathbed.
No.
Because it just wouldn't even make any sense. Would that bring you any validation, Sam? I mean, you know, okay, my best friend and partner, you know, read Dune with me on a car ride.
Right.
And now has a completely differing opinion from whatever she expressed when she was actually alive.
Well, the whole other side of that is, even if he did convert on his deathbed, even if he did get whatever... consecrated in the First Church of Christ, Chrysler or whatever, it wouldn't bother me. Because that's, you know, that was one of the things that brought me, that made me pay close attention to him rather than something that, you know, somebody I would read when I had the chance or, you know, interviews that I'd like to see. But he often took positions that I disagreed with. That's not what made me a fan of the guy. The fact that he did take some positions that I agreed with and was very good at defending them, that was something that was nice. But what I liked more is that he sort of gave me a guide, maybe not in a way a lot of his opponents would agree with, but a way to graciously debate people who debate with you in good faith, but give no quarter.
Like, I can see why that would resonate with you,
yeah,
Sam.
Like being able to go hammer and tongs, tooth and nail against somebody and just rip and try to rip their argument to shreds, but to say, no, this is what we do, this is the position we're in, I respect you, because he did. He had no trouble telling other people that he respected people he debated with or people he disagreed with. This was not a problem for him, which is, I think, a large part of the reason why this book was possible for this Tauntaun guy. Because he does have quotes of Christopher Hitchens saying really nice things about him, and I can kind of believe it, having seen a couple YouTube clips of him speaking. But then he takes it further and projects it to say, when Hitchens says, you're a really good advocate for your God, saying, well, that means Hitchens is being
converted. Swayed.
Yeah.
I guess it might be in the face of a Christian apologist and a theologian who, when faced with an atheist, is used to someone who does not act in a complimentary way and does not give any sort of recognition of one's arguments or one's, you know, craft, one's rhetorical craft. And so when he comes face to face with one that does, he assumes, oh, I guess I must be winning them over.
Yeah. Well, I've said my piece, and this is the interesting thing about it. Now that I've said my, I'm kind of done with it. You know, I may read the book at some point, and I may yell and scream at it and, you know, do terrible things to it. I don't care if he converted. I'm reasonably certain, given the preponderance of evidence, that he didn't. But that doesn't matter. Christians are going to say, we have our victory. We have our apocryphal story. Just like every other apocryphal story, we've got like the Satanic Panic and the blood libel, and we're just gonna take our ball and go home because we win, because we always win, because God's on our side, because that's how the game is played, isn't it? Is it clear that my goat's been got?
I really want to find this goat.
That's all the time we've got, I think. Not a full episode, not even a half hour. Becky?
Yes, Sam?
Thank you for humoring me.
Thank you for being humorous.
No, I literally dragged you out of the, like, out of upstairs, like, I need to talk about something, let's do a show, and you went with me, and it's late, and we're both tired. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
See you guys next week. Well, no, see you guys in some...
When we see you.
Yeah, in some undefined period of time. Oh, I'm a Christian now!